Good morning, Gavin.
G'day, James. Good to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Now, you may recognise Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman from his April Time magazine cover or the more recent, less positive media coverage of the 33-year-old prince. Gavin, can you tell us a little bit about the background about the Saudi Crown Prince? Who is he? Why is he so important in Saudi culture?
Yeah, so the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, he came to power in June last year. So he's effectively the leader of Saudi Arabia now, after his cousin, Mohammed bin Nayef, was deposed. And for Saudi Arabia, he does hold a hugely important position because he was only 31 years old when he came in. Now he's 33. And he's seen as this very, very young, very progressive, very liberal leader for the country. So, for example, under his rule, women were allowed to drive again. They were allowed to attend sporting matches. He ended a 35-year ban on movie theaters. But most importantly, he's very much an advocate for opening Saudi Arabia up to the world and, revolutionizing its economy on the world stage as part of what he calls his Vision 2030 program. So all these things have kind of helped make the Crown Prince and the Saudi regime more palatable to the West. So you just mentioned the Time cover. So when he arrived in the U.S. in March this year, they pretty much rolled out the red carpet for him in the U.S. He was given a rock star's welcome. He met Donald Trump in the White House. He met Wall Street executives, tech giants in Silicon Valley, even celebrities like The Rock and Morgan Freeman. And they all kind of hailed him as this revolutionary. But then some of these sort of progressive motions, though, were just sort of seen as kind of like an effective PR exercise so that the West would be more keen to do business with the Saudis. But at the same time, the regime was still corrupt. They were still killing people. They engaged in this brutal military intervention on neighboring Yemen, which, killed tens of thousands of children, plunged millions into starvation. They cut off Qatar's only land border to isolate it. And there's all sorts of corruption taking place inside the kingdom's elite factions.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, so to tie that all back to Khashoggi's murder on October 2, all this brutal stuff has come back front and center. And I feel like, this rosy portrait of the Crown Prince is finally beginning to crack and people are going, oh, wait, this regime is actually kind of problematic. And Khashoggi, he wasn't the first Saudi critic to disappear. But I imagine, the Saudi authorities are really regretting this alleged murder now because I don't think they expected it to get this much international traction.
And it sure has.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
I do remember the Time magazine cover. I remember a few of the things surrounding this prince being quite positive, as you said, about relaxing the movie theatre law and women being able to drive. But as you've also mentioned, there's this massive behind the scenes, behind the curtain things that are going on. And I think that this disappearance has really pulled back the curtain and people are really looking inside the Saudi culture now. Turkish President Erdogan has been working with Saudi officials in the investigation of the journalist's death as well. And he says he wants to find, in his words, the naked truth. Can you tell us what he said and are you satisfied with what this is, the naked truth?
It's a bit tricky because you're right. He said he would reveal the naked truth. He didn't actually tell us that much. He didn't give examples of evidence. He didn't even mention the Crown Prince by name. So I think there are all sorts of questions that still remain unanswered in this case. We still don't know how exactly he died. I mean, we know it was probably brutal. We know that he certainly would have suffered, but we don't know how exactly he died, the details around that. We don't know who orchestrated this. I mean, observers have said there's no way this could have been carried out without the Crown Prince's knowledge. But do we have definitive proof that this murder came directly from Saudi Arabia's political elite? And will that proof be released to the public? And also, what happened to his body? I mean, there were earlier reports that parts of his body were found in the garden of the Saudi Consul General's home in Istanbul. But I mean, ultimately, we still don't really know exactly what happened to him when he walked through that door. And exactly what happened to his body as it was transported in whatever state out of the consulate.
Yeah, it's very Hollywood-like the way this is kind of playing out.
And absolutely.
There is something as well about an audio recording of the last moment of this man's life. Is that something that's got a bit of traction behind it?
Yeah, so according to Turkish media reports, there is an audio recording of Khashoggi's murder in the consulate. Early reports said he was wearing an Apple Watch and that this recording was synced to his iPhone, which his wife had out in the car while she was waiting for him. But there's more recent reports, which are perhaps a little bit more likely that Turkish spies were actually secretly recording what was happening. Now, this alleged recording has not been released to the media, but according to a Washington Post report that ran over the weekend, CIA Director Gina Haspel in the US has listened to it, and a source described it as compelling evidence. And Turkey's also claimed that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has heard the recording, but the US State Department has denied this. But the recording, I think it is so important because it could provide definitive proof that top-level Saudi officials were responsible for the murder of this journalist. And, you know, the story keeps changing. I mean, in the latest version, they finally acknowledged that it was premeditated murder, but they're claiming, obviously, that the Saudi prince has nothing to do with it. So if incontrovertible evidence presents itself in the form of this audio recording that the highest Saudi officials were involved, Donald Trump and other world leaders will have to act. They'll have to condemn the kingdom, take action, you know, potentially impose sanctions, restrict arms sales and so on, which I think Trump fears, if the Saudis retaliate, could potentially affect the U.S. midterm elections, which are coming up next week.
Yeah, right. Because I was going to say, U.S. President Donald Trump has called the incident the worst cover-up in history, but European nations have already placed sanctions on Saudi Arabia, but the U.S. hasn't. So what's, I guess, the outcome from that?
Yeah, it's a bit... I think Donald Trump's in a bit of a tricky position because Saudi Arabia holds, obviously, a very important position in the world. It owns, you know, nearly 20% of the world's conventional oil reserves. Mm. It's the largest economy in the Middle East and the world's largest exporter of oil. So the U.S. relies heavily on them, and they need Saudi Arabia's resources to keep their fuel prices down. Now, some legislators have loudly been calling on Donald Trump to impose sanctions on weapon sales to Saudi Arabia. They're the biggest supplier of arms to Saudi Arabia. But with the U.S. midterm elections coming up on November 6th, the one thing Donald Trump needs to do is keep Saudi Arabia on his side, basically, so that, you know, oil prices are as stable as possible ahead of that. And the Saudis know that. So it's quite a tricky position. You know, like, how do we balance our obvious financial and political interests in this country with the fact that they've demonstrated, you know, a complete disregard for human rights, for the right to free speech, for Western values? And that's why, you know, Donald Trump has now said it's the worst cover in the history of cover-ups, but he does keep changing his position. Like, at first he said there'd be severe punishments, and then he kind of backflipped and went, you know, oh no, innocent till proven guilty. He compared it to the Brett Kavanaugh sexual assault case. He accepted the Saudis' version of events, but now, as he just said, he's flipped again to saying it's the worst cover-up. So I think this kind of represents the pressure in the dilemma that he and other world leaders in Europe are facing as they attempt to balance their interests with their, I guess, moral obligation, if you want to call it that, to not let them get away with this.
Yeah, absolutely. They're definitely in a bit of a predicament in terms of, I guess, their economy or their goodwill as well. In your opinion, why has the world become so captivated by this story? It's not something that I feel would jump out to people straight away, but it has.
Yeah, totally. It's interesting, isn't it? I think, you know, most people had no idea who Jamal Khashoggi was until October 2 and the reports that came after that. I mean, even our readers at news.com.au, people have never had such a sustained interest in Saudi Arabia as they have these past 3 weeks. I think part of it is, you know, the Saudis have killed critics before. That's no secret. But Jamal Khashoggi, he was a U.S. resident. He'd fled Saudi Arabia. He was living in Virginia. And he was a columnist for one of the free world's leading newspapers, the Washington Post. In fact, his last column that he published before he died was criticizing rising authoritarianism in Saudi Arabia. So I think part of why this resonates so much with people is because it was literally a silencing of free speech. I think it symbolized, you know, an attack on Western democracy, on Western freedoms, and particularly, I think, in this era of you know, rising authoritarianism, of these sort of amoral transactional international politics. I think people are afraid because someone who spoke out against all these things was brutally murdered. I also think part of it is the shock factor. I mean, it was such a brutal murder and such a tragic story. Like you said earlier, it's kind of like a film. You know, a man goes into this building, his fiance's waiting for hours in the car, he never comes out, and suddenly there's talk of, you know, a body double wearing his clothes and talk of bone sores and dismemberment, and it's just horrific.
Yeah.
But I think at the heart of it, there's just something about an ongoing unsolved murder mystery that really kind of captivates us and captures our attention. It's kind of like our addiction to crime podcasts.
I was literally just thinking that, yeah.
Totally. And I think there's just this kind of grotesque fascination with the grisly details. So, yeah, I mean, it's a bunch of things.
It's going to be so interesting to watch how this all plays out internationally, especially with Trump and Europe, and definitely the elites in Saudi Arabia as well. So thank you so much, Gavin, for letting us know the insides and the true information from the story that is ever evolving.
No worries, James. Thanks for having me.